Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Chumash series on OU Torah. My name is Michael Gutman. This week we'll be learning Rav Hirsch's commentary on Parshas Miketz. We begin at the end of Perek Mem Aleph in Pasuk Nun, where the Torah describes the birth of Yosef's two children and gives the reasons for their names. And in Pasuk Nun, the Torah says, "Uliyosef yulod shnei vanim b'terem tavo shnas hara'av," that to Yosef there were born two sons before the years of famine arrived. Asher yoladalo osnas bas Potipharah kohen on, that Osnas, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On, bore to him. So Rav Hirsch, commenting on this pasuk, notes that there is a bit of repetition here. First, it says that there were two sons born to Yosef, whom Asnas bore to him. Generally speaking, when the Torah describes the birth of a child, either says Vateled, says that he had a wife, Vateled lo es so-and-so, or Vayoled es so-and-so, that he himself bore so-and-so. But this is the expression Uli Yosef yulod shnei vanim, the passive expression that they were born to him, is in itself an anomaly. Certainly, when combined with the traditional expression of Asher yoledelo osnas, it could have just said Vateled lo osnas shnei vanim b'terem tavo shnas hara'av. So what is the Torah conveying with this atypical description of the birth of children? By putting it in the passive voice together with the traditional expression used for the birth of children. So Rav Hirsch also notes that later on in Parashas Vayigash, when the Torah lists Yaakov's 70 descendants who are going down to Mitzrayim, there too it describes each of the families of the Shvatim with the typical listing of children, where it says Bnei Reuven Chanochu Falu Chatzron V'Charmi, and Bnei so and so, and Bnei so and so. And then when we get to Yosef, it says that Bnei Rachel Eshes Yaakov Yosef Vinyamin Vayiva Leid Li Yosef Be'eretz Mitzrayim, that they were born to Yosef in the land of Mitzrayim. Asher Yoludalo Osnas Bas Potipharah Kohen On Es Menashev Es Ephraim. And there again in Perek Mem Vav Pasuk Chaf in Parshas Vayigash, we see again the passive voice of Vayiva Leid Li Yosef, they were born to Yosef, combined with Asher Yoledelo Osnas Bas Potipharah, which here is also quite strange because nowhere else is it mentioned wives, that Vateled Lo so-and-so. Here it mentions the wife, Asher Yoledelo Osnas, and also Vayiva Leid Li Yosef, that they were born to Yosef. So not only is it strange here, but it's the same exact atypical expression regarding the same exact family, Yosef and Osnas, and their two children, Ephraim and Menashe, in next week's Parsha. So it's clear that Torah is trying to convey some sort of message with this phrasing. So Rav Hirsch says that there's two perspectives on the birth of a child. That the mother bears the child. The child is physically born to the mother. The question is, will the child remain born to his father as he grows older, as he becomes his own adult, and develops his own approach to life? Does he remain born to his father? Does he take on his father's way of life and absorb the education that his father gives to him? And this is reminiscent of what we talked about in Parashas Bereishis, of the dual command of Peru Urevu, which Rav Hirsch takes to mean two different aspects of raising children. There's Peru, the physical aspect of being fruitful, of having a child physically, and Revu, to raise the child and to provide the child with an education and train them as they grow up. So those are two aspects of having children. And Rav Hirsch says that under typical circumstances, the Torah would just write, Vateled lo, And we would understand that one's wife bears the child, and the child grows up under the combined influence of the two parents, and assumedly adopts their way of life, and assimilates that into his own personality and follows in their footsteps. And there's no need, Rav Hirsch writes, to add specifically that the child remains born to the father. It's taken for granted. However, the marriage, the relationship between Yosef and Asnas was not your typical relationship. You're not your typical shidduch, you might say. Because here, on the one hand, you have Yosef, who comes from the house of Yaakov Avinu, and has a legacy into which he wants to induct his children. And he has a heritage in the Masorah of Yaakov Avinu that he wants to teach to Ephraim and Menashe. And he's married to Asnas, whom the Torah is quite clear about who she is. We already know who she is from a few psukim earlier, when the Torah tells us that he married her. The Torah told us already, Vayitzen lo Asnas bas Potiphera Kohen On Leisha, that he married Asnas, who was daughter of Potiphera Kohen On. But here, by the birth of the children, the Torah reiterates who she was. She was not just an Egyptian woman. She was the daughter of a priestly family, of this Potiphera, who was a priest for one of On, and was one of the we would say the chief idol worshiper, one of the chief idol worshippers in all the land of Egypt. So she grew up in a priestly family, a family steeped in religion, or their religion. And now she is married to Yosef, who, although now he is the ruler, was until recently just a slave, a foreigner, who has this very strange way of life compared to the Egyptians. And Rav Hirsch has an interesting line here where he says that a man can be an authoritarian ruler, feared and dreaded by all, yet in his own home he can be a cringing slave to his haughty wife. So perhaps we might assume that Yosef marrying such a woman would not be able to override her when it came to their children, and that she would take the lead, and he would not be able to raise his children in the Mesorah of Yaakov Avinu. But the Torah is telling us that didn't happen that way, and that Asnas was won over to Yosef's way of life and identified with it completely, to the point where she was able to also join Yosef in raising their children in the way of life that Yosef wanted to see his children follow. And because that's not taken for granted in this situation, the Torah needs to tell us that both aspects, that the children were born to Yosef, even though they were born by, they were born with an E, born by Asnas bas Potiphera Kohen On. Despite that, they were still Yosef Yula. They were still born to Yosef as well. They were not just physically born to her, his wife. They were also, in a spiritual sense, in an educational sense, born to Yosef as well. And because that's such a chiddush, based on Yosef being the lone Jew in Golos and Mitzrayim, being that he married the daughter of a priestly family from Egypt, because it's so unexpected, the Torah stresses it here and stresses it again in Parshas Vayigash. That answer is the repetition. Now, in terms of the passive expression of U Yosef Yulad, and again in Parshas Vayigash, Vayivaled Li Yosef, so Rav Hirsch says that there is a passive expression here that they were born to him, but there is no mention of an the person performing the action, who is making them born, who is bearing them. So in the next line it says Asher Yolad Lo Asnas, but because there's this passive expression without an active person in it, it leaves it open, indicating that there is a form of divine assistance here, that it is Hashem who is the person who is not, who is the agent here that is making it happen. How are they born to Yosef? How was it Uli Yosef Yulud? Who was the one who made that? Who was the active party in that happening? That was HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There was certain divine protection and blessing that Yosef had and his children had, so that enabled him and Asnas to raise them in the way that he wanted. And that was absolutely necessary based on their surroundings. That if they're in Mitzrayim, the wife is from a family of over the Avodah Zarah. But nevertheless, he had the Hashgacha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that enabled him to raise children in a way that they became Shvatim of Klal Yisrael in their own right. And Rav Hirsch says that is why we give our children the bracha, Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chim Nasha. We want our children to also have that divine guidance, that divine protection that enables them to grow up into productive members of Klal Yisrael when they grow older. And we know that we're in Golos today, and there are so many difficulties in Chinuch Habanim, v'Habanos, and we need the help and the assistance of Hashem. And so when we bless our children, we say Simcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chim Menashe. Just like with Ephraim and Menashe, Hashem played an active role, albeit behind the scenes, in their upbringing, and enabled them to become who they eventually became, against all odds, in the most difficult of circumstances, and enabled them to be born to Yosef, as well as to their mother. So we want our children to merit that divine protection as well, and we invoke it when we say Yisimcha Elokim ke'Ephraim v'chim Menashe. So then the Torah goes on to describe how the years of famine begin, and the famine spreads to Eretz Canaan, and Yaakov is forced to send his sons to Mitzrayim to purchase some provisions so that they don't starve. And then we begin the whole story of Yosef and his brothers, where Yosef disguises himself, does not reveal his identity, and launches this entire charade by which he accuses them of being spies and forces them to bring Binyamin down, and then accuses Binyamin of stealing, and only then he reveals himself. And Rav Hirsch, like all the Mepharshim, has to answer this, or attempts to answer this, the obvious question of why does Yosef feel the need to do this? And first, Rav Hirsch brings up the idea that, which is put forward by some other Mepharshim, that Yosef felt a responsibility to see his dreams fulfilled. He had seen a dream in which his brothers bowed down to him. And when the brothers first came, Binyamin wasn't there. So he needed to make sure that his brothers bowed down to him. That's why he had to demand Binyamin's arrival in Mitzrayim. And he had to find a way to make it happen. Because if he had revealed himself, then maybe they wouldn't all bow down to him later on. So Rav Hirsch says that can't be. Because it's not for a human being to see to the fulfillment of his own dreams. If he has a dream, then Hashem will see to it that it's fulfilled. And it's not his business to take it upon himself to have his dreams fulfilled. Why would he bother doing that? And certainly Rav Hirsch, at least for his father's sake, He must have known how Yaakov Avinu was suffering and mourning his disappearance. Why would he not have immediately revealed himself to his brothers? So the way Rav Hirsch understands this whole story, the way he sees it is that Yosef understood that there were two problems in his relationship with his brothers. The first problem is that he, understandably, had some resentment towards them. He was angry at them for the way they treated him, for selling them. And he understood that he had to overcome those feelings. And at the same time, he knew that they had hated him beforehand as well. And he needed to make sure that they changed the way they felt about him, and that they had changed their their character traits that had led them to act in the way that they had acted. And he says that it wouldn't have done anybody any good for Yosef to reveal himself with these resentful feelings beneath the surface still outstanding, because then, sure, they would physically be reunited, but they would not be a family in the true sense of family. They would not be friendly with one another. They would just have restored the status quo of them being together, but them hating him, and now him additionally being resentful towards them for what they had done to him. And so this would not have accomplished anything to reunite them at this point in time. He first had to fix these outstanding issues before revealing himself. And so he embarked on this whole charade in order to fix the problem, because he needed to get over his feelings towards them. And he did that by putting them in the same situation as the first time. He wanted to test them and see if they would be able, if they were willing to deprive their father of one of his sons again. He created this whole situation where he would threaten. He forced him to bring Binyamin down, and then he tried to take Binyamin from them and put them in a very difficult situation. Because at the end of the parsha, the brothers are left having to choose between leaving all their families to starve, because again they're offering themselves up as slaves, and then they won't be able to bring food back to their family. Or they can bring food back to their family and go home and leave Binyamin in Mitzrayim and devastate their father Yaakov again. And they're really between a rock and a hard place. And this is the situation Yosef wants to put them in and see how they react. And they showed Yosef through their reaction that they had changed. Their approach towards family had changed, because they were willing to sacrifice for Binyamin. Yehuda put himself on the line, and he fought for Binyamin, and he tried to persuade Yosef to change his mind. And thus Yosef finally saw that they had changed, and so with that he was able to forgive them for the way they had treated him. He was able to let it go because he saw that they put in the same situation then, they would not have done it a second time. But at the same time, he also, the second issue he wanted to correct, was to fix their feelings of hatred towards him. And he understood that if he would reveal himself on the spot, that they would just be together, but they would still feel that he was out to get them, he wanted to lord over them. They would say, oh great, look, we found Yosef, and now his dreams have come true, and now he's ruling over all of us, just like he wanted to all along. So Yosef presents himself now, he's the ruler of Egypt. And that's why the Torah describes Yosef in this situation as Yosef, hu ha-shalit al ha'aretz, hu ha-mashbir al ha'am ha'aretz. He wasn't just the one handing out the food to everybody. He was the ruler over the entire country, and he presented himself as such. And he wanted to show them, at the end of the story, he wanted them to have seen that the entire time he could have hurt them. He could have punished them. He could have taken revenge on them. He could have done whatever he wanted with the brothers. And he didn't. He did not choose to take revenge on them. And so at the end of the story, when they see what Yosef could have done, they see him accusing them of being spies and putting them in a funny situation and threatening to take the brother and threatening to enslave them. And all of a sudden, at the end of the story, they realize Yosef's tremendous power. That Yosef is Adonai Ha'aretz, and he can do whatever he wants, and he chooses to reveal himself to them. Had he done that on the spot, they wouldn't, at their first encounter, they would not have appreciated that fact. They would not have appreciated the fact that Yosef had the opportunity to harm them. But now that he put them through a bit of a difficult situation, they understood that he could have, but he did not. He could have treated them much worse, and he did not do so. And so, when the point of as Rehersh writes, he writes here, in short, at the moment when he would identify himself to them as their brother Yosef, the blindfold would drop from their eyes, and it would be possible for both Yosef and his brothers to completely erase the past. Only thus could Yosef hope to be truly restored as a son to his father and as a brother to his father's children. So Yosef wants, at the moment of his where he identifies himself, he wants both of them, both sides, he and his brothers, to forget the past and be willing to look past what happened before and realize that both of them were not the same they once were, and that they had changed, their attitudes had changed, and they were willing to be friendly and like family to one another. And that would be a true reunification of Yaakov's family. And so Rav Hirsch writes that with this understanding, we see how all of Yosef's plan was essential and absolutely necessary. He needed to put his brothers through this so that the eventual revelation of his true identity would really be effective, and they could live together as a happy family once more. When the brothers talk to Yaakov about going back to Mitzrayim together with Binyamin, so we see two separate conversations that take place on this subject. First, when they initially return, they tell Yaakov the whole story of their trip to Mitzrayim and the demand of the Adonai Haaretz, the master of the land, to bring Binyamin. And Yaakov flatly refuses. He says, you can't do this. And they try to convince him, and Reuven makes an offer, and Yaakov refuses again. He says he is not going. And then, at the beginning of Perek Mem Gimel, we see how they're beginning to run out of food. The famine is intensifying. And the brothers again bring up the subject to Yaakov. And now Yehuda steps in and says, we have to take him. We have no choice. We can't go without him. And if we don't go, we'll starve. There's no other option. And he really persuades Yaakov of the inevitability of Binyamin's trip to Mitzrayim. And in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Vav, we read, Vayomer Yisrael, Lama Hari Osem Li L'Hagid Lo Isha U Lo Chemach, that Yisrael said, why did you do evil to me by telling the man that you have another brother? And Rav Hirsch notes that all of a sudden, we see the name Yisrael again. That he refers to that from the time of Yosef's sale, Yaakov is referred to as Yaakov throughout. We never see the name Yisrael until here. Why is that? Why does Yaakov all of a sudden switch to Yisrael at this point? And it continues for the rest of the narrative, because we see again in Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Yehuda al Yisrael Aviv. And then he responds to Yehuda in Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer Alehem Yisrael Avihem. And so, from this point on, he's transformed to Yisrael. Why the name change at this juncture in the discussion? So Hirsch first reiterates the difference between Yaakov and Yisrael, and we've seen this before, since the name change in Parashas Vayishlach. And and we touched on it briefly in our discussion of the Gid Hanoshe and Parshas VeYishlach. So he says that the name Yaakov indicates someone who is behind, someone who is limping, right? And someone who is dependent on those ahead of him. Yaakov was named because he was grasping the heel of Esav. So he was coming from behind. So when Yaakov is in a state of depression, when he is down, mourning loss of his son, he's Yaakov. He feels he's dependent, he's falling, he's behind. He is just, life is dragging him ahead, and he is just being a passive player in the difficulties that he is undergoing. But Rav Hirsch writes here that the true Jew feels depressed only as long as he does not know what he must do. There are only two things that can depress a righteous Jew: guilt and doubt about where his duty lies, not about what might happen to him. In other words, Rav Hirsch says that only two things truly should cause us to be upset: either guilt over something we did wrong or may have done wrong in the past, or uncertainty about what is demanded of us in certain situations in life, and we're not sure what Hashem wants us to do. A Jew does not feel depressed and upset about what might happen or what the future holds for him. That we don't get upset about, because that's not up to us. We know that what's in our control is our own actions. So yes, we get upset when we do the wrong thing or when we're unsure about what to do. But once all is done and once we feel confident that we are doing what we need to do, uncertainty about the future does not bother us because we have bitachon that Hashem is taking care of us. And so with this idea, Rav Hirsch explains the transition in the names. As long as Yaakov is in doubt, he doesn't know what to do about Binyamin. The brothers come and they talk to him about what happened in Mitzrayim and that they need to bring Binyamin. Yaakov does not want that to happen. He's unsure. He tries to keep Binyamin as long as he can, and he doesn't want to give in, even though he's not sure what needs to be done. And this doubt about what to do is designated with the name Yaakov. He's upset. He's depressed. He's feeling uncertain about what's expected of him, what he should do. But once he realizes that there's no choice and Binyamin has to go, now he knows what he needs to do. He knows what Hashem expects of him. He knows what his situation calls for, and he goes ahead and he gives into that and he says, "Fine, Binyamin's going to go." And once his path is clear, he becomes Yisrael. He becomes Yisrael because now Hashem takes over. He's no longer upset, and now he's done what he needs to do. And as the name Yisrael, signifies with the Hashem's sovereignty is such that Hashem will watch over the results, the ramifications of his decision, and will hopefully make sure that it is successful. And Rav Hirsch cites the pasuk in Tehillim in Parak Lamed Zayin pasuk Hey, Gol al Hashem darkecha. Uvtach Allah v'hu yaseh. Goal means to roll over. So it means goal Hashem darkecha means to roll your path over to Hashem. Meaning take your path and then roll over the results of that to Hashem. When something becomes too heavy for us to bear, then we roll it onto Hashem. Uvtach Allah and we trust in Him v'hu yaseh, and Hashem will make it happen. And the benefit of having a Ribono Sho'olam on our side is that we can share the burden of life with him. And when we are uncertain about what will happen in the future, we share that with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we roll that burden of concern over to Hashem to take care of, and we can trust that he will take care of it. And that transforms Yaakov into Yisrael. He has a whole new attitude at this point towards what will happen, because now he knows he has made his decision and Hashem will take care of the rest. And I want to read to you what Rav Hirsch writes in his Parish on Tehillim in Parak Lamed Zayin to explain this concept. Rav Hirsch writes, in other words, let God bear for you those burdens which you cannot lift by your own strength, which are too heavy for you to carry alone on your life's path. Of course, you must always do your own share, too, to the best of your strength and ability. But when your own resources are at an end, then rely upon God to do the rest. He will lend his aid to those of your endeavors that are wholesome in his eyes, and he will see them through to successful conclusion. The realization that our own strength may be inadequate must never cause us to sink back into inertia. It must never cause us to refrain from a good endeavor because of the difficulties involved that may seem insurmountable. Let us keep in mind that we have a mighty helper in God in all our good endeavors. Let us do our share. The Lord will do the rest. So, this is an attitude towards life that we learn from Tehillim, from Gol Hashem Darkecha, Uvtach Allah V'hu Yaseh. And this idea we see here in the sudden change in Yaakov's name. He makes a decision. Binyam is going to go. He becomes Yisrael. Rav Hirsch says he still complains to the brothers, to Yehuda, that they mentioned to the man that he has a brother. But he's no longer fighting what has to happen. He's just complaining that they brought about the situation in the first place. But he, at this point, as soon as he realizes that this is what must happen, he becomes Yisrael. His whole outlook, his whole attitude towards the situation changes. He's no longer depressed about what should he do. He is now confident that he has made a decision. He has done his hishtadlus. Ad kan is what he has to do. And now Hashem takes over. And that's the meaning of Gol al Hashem Darkecha, Uvtach Allah V'hu Yaseh. We do our part as much as we can, trusting that we're making the right decision, doing what we are supposed to do, and then we can count on Hashem to take care of the rest. And as we read in last week's Parsha, in Parsha Vayeshev, Rav Hirsch writes that when man's purposes coincide with God's purposes, God helps man attain these purposes. So we should remain confident that if we are doing the right thing, then we can trust in Hashem to see it through to completion. In the collected writings, in the 8th volume, there is an essay entitled The Jewish Sabbath, in which Rav Hirsch writes about Shabbos from different perspectives, different aspects of Shabbos. He talks about Shabbos of creation, Shabbos in the Midbar, Shabbos of the Seres Adibros, Shabbos as it relates to the Mishkan, and so on. And in towards the beginning of this essay, which is on page 198 in the 8th volume of the Collected Writings, Rav Hirsch sees this pasuk in Tehillim as a description of what Shabbos should mean to us. Rav Hirsch writes, "The Sabbath says to us, Gol al Hashem darkecha v'hu ya'aseh. Place upon God the burden of your way. He will take care of it. Once you have done your best, God will do the rest. This is the promise of the Sabbath, for it is in its name that you halt your efforts and labor. It is the Sabbath which shows Him, your Father in heaven, to be the all-powerful guardian and guide, to be your God who fights your battles, knows your labors, and shares your worries. He is ready to relieve you from most of your burden if you only decide to entrust it to Him." So on Shabbos, we act out our faith in Gol Hashem Darkecha, Uvtach Allah V'hu Yaseh. We work for 6 days, and on the seventh day we don't work. And we express our trust in Hashem that we don't have to do everything, that we do our utmost, and we trust that Hashem will complete it. So we don't work every day. We have a Shabbos which belongs to Hashem, a Shabbos where we take what we are work for 6 days, we take all the efforts we've put in, all our endeavors, and we turn them over to Hashem, and we step back, and we don't do malacha for a full day, and we trust that Hashem will take care of it. Hu yaseh. That's the meaning of Shabbos. On Shabbos, we transform ourselves from an attitude of Yaakov to an attitude of Yisrael. And we express our bitachon that Hashem will see through all of our endeavors to completion and allow us to be successful in all that we do.